So we are in our second week of this exciting series, which is, you might have guessed it in a word, community. It's all about community. It's based on the book More Together Than Alone by Mark Nepo. Some people are participating in study groups. Some people are reading along as we go. So we're in part two this week. It's really handy the way Mark laid it out, 6 parts, 6 weeks. I love it when it falls together like that. We call that divine order. Yeah, so I noticed this week, and it might be that I noticed this week because I happened to be living with a person who was creating it this week, but that our core values really connect with this work, and the connection I'm making here is Brenly created a rock garden of our core values over here on the left off the patio that you might want to check out when you go outside. Yeah. I don't know where she is. Oh, there she is. Hello. Hello, darling. It will take a while for the agave plants to take off, but when they do, it's going to be especially beautiful. So go check it out. And we can remind ourselves then of what these core values are. These are our new core values here at Unity of Walnut Creek. And so there's a slide. We're going to take a look at them for a moment here. Love is our essence. So love is it's everything, right? That's where we begin. That's where I don't think that core value will ever come off the list for Unity of Walnut Creek, right? Or probably any unity anywhere, because it's so foundational to who we are. It's this understanding that love is our essence as divine beings. Love is the essence of all people. Love is the essence of earth. It is our source. It is where we come from. So you can see how important it is, right? And then there's really wisdom and love go together really beautifully because, you know, in the 12 Powers teachings of Unity, Charles Fillmore talked about how love and wisdom are twin powers, that the two of them work together. We've all experienced love without wisdom, probably. Anybody? Right? And wisdom without love, you know, it just doesn't have quite the same spark. And so you can see how they go together, excuse me. So love is centered here, of course, in the heart and wisdom in the solar plexus. So even in the body, there is a connection between the two and how they work together. When we love as our essence, wisdom is the divine knowing of that. It's that what we grow into and evolve into over time. Wisdom is following our divine guidance. Wisdom is tapping in and tuning in. It's also extending understanding, to want to understand one another. So these two together, love, as Maya Angelou, I always love this quote about love, love is that which binds us together, and love is also that which liberates us all. So with that idea, binding together and liberating us all in this base of this core of wisdom that helps us sort of temper how we navigate the world and evolve our understanding of our divine knowing. So these two are really key, and then we're going to move into a little bit about connection and service a little bit later in this message. So I wanted to start with this wisdom idea of knowing our divinity and the idea of how it shows up for us in the world. So Mark Nepo, in his book, talks about since the beginning of time, when groups of humans have encountered one another, there have been sort of two tribes, or two, you could say, mindsets, two ways of approaching one another. One approach is to say, you're different, go away. And the other one is, you're different, come teach me. Quite different approach, isn't it? And so it's these two tribes that at any given point in our lives, we may subscribe to one or the other. At any moment in time, we might subscribe to one or the other. But mostly, we want to hang out with that mindset that says, you're different, come teach us. Come show me the way. Come help embolden and expand my understanding. That's wisdom. That's the invitation that we make to one another. There was a man you might know of, Martin Niemöller. He was, or Niemöller, I believe is how you say it. He was a Lutheran pastor before World War II, and he was anti-Semitic at that time. But then the otherness, the idea of you're different, go away, the camp that he was living in, shifted for him as the movement became crueler and the movement became more dangerous of Nazism. And the process of bringing Nazism into the German churches was something he opposed, and he became a vocal opponent of that. Because of that, he was imprisoned in several concentration camps. And during that time and through that process, he completely transformed into the other mindset, which is the one of course, come teach us, right? That there's some understanding. But he regretted that he wasn't there from the get-go. And so he wrote this poem that you might be aware of, or probably as you hear it, you might remember hearing it before. It goes like this. They came first for the communists, and I didn't speak up because I wasn't a communist. And then they came for the Jews, and I didn't speak up because I wasn't a Jew. And then they came for the trade unionists, and I didn't speak up because I wasn't a trade unionist. And then they came for the Catholics, and I didn't speak up because I was a Protestant. And then they came for me, and by that time, no one was left to speak up. It's a sobering one, isn't it? But it really gets us to that kind of gut feeling, right? That's why the solar plexus is the house of wisdom. Because it's here that we feel the truth, that we know the truth from an innate understanding. That's that innate divine knowing. And also that innate knowing will tell us when something's not right, when something's off, when something doesn't feel like it lines up with the truth of who we are and how we were wired to be with one another in community. And so it's that that we can really trust more than anything else. If you're looking for truth, feel it. Feel it here. That's wisdom. And that's wisdom in its ever-evolving form. Wisdom will call us to do things when it's inconvenient and when it's challenging too. If it has a downfall, that's the downfall to this path, really, isn't it? To following our divine guidance, to listening for our divine guidance. Because there will be times when we are asked to step over our privilege and welcome with a helping hand, or to step over our privilege, or to take a risk and speak up on behalf of someone else. And those kinds of times, we'll be faced with that choice point. What do we follow? Do we follow the path, the twin powers of love and wisdom, or do we go into a place of fear and separation and isolationism? Always available to us to choose how we move and navigate through this life. I think all four of the core values are really embodied by the warmth of hospitality, the idea of hospitality. We have had a resurgence of hospitality, I think, in our community, which feels really good. Have you noticed that? We have a care network that cares for one another when somebody is ill and needs rides to doctor's appointments or needs meal support. That beautiful children's, the youth and family ministry hospitality this morning you'll get to enjoy after service if you didn't yet, of pumpkins and baked goods and chai, pumpkin lattes. I don't usually drink much coffee, so I had a little of that in between services, and I'm like, woo, okay. I didn't like put it all together that was going to be a strong beverage. But it's just in the munch and mingle that John and Suzanne, I see, and Lisa, all part of the connection team that are putting that together once a month. So I just feel that sense of hospitality here, how that connects us, how that is such a part of the value of connection, as well as the value of love and the value of service. So they all kind of come into play, don't they? You know, I've learned travels a little bit about hospitality. You know that in India they actually have a term. It's called Atitha Devo Bhava, and it means the guest is God. Isn't that beautiful? So they see that just very naturally, anyone who comes who's other is a guest, and that guest is God, and it has this basic understanding that the guest has a gift to offer us that we will not know until we invite them in. Yeah, it is real. And I found that when in my short time of traveling in India, I found that to be true over and over. I was invited several times into somebody's home or into some kind of warmth of hospitality and connection. In one case, my friend Jane and I were traveling together in India, and we went to this little kiosk, and it was kind of a storefront in the front of a woman's home, and she sold there, like, you know, statues of deities and incense and things you might imagine that would be for sale in India. And we started talking to her, and she invited us in for tea, of course. Chai, masala chai tea is always kind of the way, right? And we got to meet her family. And then we started just talking, and I mentioned somewhere that I wanted to get a Punjabi, which is like the outfit I'm wearing, except mine's sort of a hybrid Western Indian Punjabi. Because usually the pants are sort of like, kind of like parachute pants. So we were talking about this, and it was like she became my Indian mother for the day. So we made an appointment to go out on a little mother-daughter kind of date. I don't know about you, but when I spend time with my mom, she always wants to go to lunch and go shopping. That's like her thing, right? So that's what we do. And so my Indian mother wanted to do the same thing. She was very excited to take me shopping for what I was imagining that I wanted. And so we hopped a bus, and we went to a little cafe, a little outdoor cafe. Now, you have to know this was a pretty striking difference between how a date out with my mother would look in America and how it looked in India, you know? So we're like on the street, you know, pretty much, and there's dust flying and all kinds of traffic of every kind of vehicle you can imagine, and skinny cows walking by, you know, while we're having our little thing that was cooked right there in front of us, and the, you know, just all the sounds and sights and smells of India, the aliveness of that very different culture. And so then she took me to the shop, and I got to pick out this fabric, and they made it for me. And then she took it back to her house and said, come pick it up in a few days. And so there's this beautiful experience that I have, I think of every time I take this out of my closet, of that woman, my Indian mother. Now, what did I offer her? I don't know what the gift was I gave. I do know that she talked about her marital troubles most of the time that we were together. So maybe I offered her a listening ear. Maybe I offered her a holding space, a true stranger, a foreigner, just listening, you know? I don't know what the gift is. You know, only she could say. But what it was this beautiful exchange, this connection, this point of hospitality, you know? I've learned that in places I've traveled, and you probably have too, that hospitality is held in a different kind of in a higher light, I would say, than sometimes in our own culture. And so to those people all around the world, I would say, you know, you're different. Come teach us. Come teach us the ways of hospitality, because there's so much to gain from that. So, you know, connection is really what hospitality is all about. And part of connection is recognizing that there's a law of cause and effect. You know, there's a law of how we show up and how it affects others, how it affects the world, like the pebble in the pond and how it ripples out, right? There is always a cause and effect. And I think a lot of times we don't realize that. We don't, maybe in our shortcomings of, in our limited ways in which we see our worthiness, I think we don't always recognize what an impact the way that we show up, the energy we bring, the actions we take, the words we speak, what a difference it makes in the world, far beyond where we might see where those ripples go. And so to pay attention to that is really a key part of connection. I was thinking about the story where Mark Nepo tells in the book that he lived in New York, and he and his wife moved to Michigan, and he hadn't gotten the emissions test done yet on his car. So we took it to a mechanic in Michigan, and lo and behold, Michigan, at the time at least, had no emissions regulations whatsoever. You know, the automotive capital of the United States had no emissions regulations. And so, you know, Mark was sort of scratching his head, like, none? And the mechanic said, hey, don't worry about it. The winds blow north here. It heads up to Canada. I know, it's like funny and then not, right? ignorance blows in all directions. So it's that kind of knowing, you know, that we are all connected and that what we do and what we say and how we believe and the air we breathe, right? And Ariane and Janet, this is actually already written in my notes, but you sang it today. We are all connected by the air we breathe, they sang at the very beginning, in case you missed that part, which is one of their classic songs that they often bring to us. But isn't it true? We are all connected by the air we breathe. We are all connected by the same earth that we walk upon. We are all connected because we are a human family. We are all connected because we are part of life. We are all connected because we come from the one. That one love connects us all. It's so easy to forget. Because they, you know, the expert they we talked about last week, you know, tell us differently, right? And then we make the mistake of, instead of acting from here and taking in those beliefs from here and deciding for ourselves with that power of discernment, that value of wisdom, we let them, whoever they are, tell us. And then we all sort of fall asleep and start walking in line with that belief that somehow if we stop and feel and rest in it, go, uh-uh, that's not right. Kind of like Martin Niemöller came to when he went from the one mindset that said go away to the other that said, huh, come teach me. So this week, how many of you dealt with not having power or not having power somewhere? Of course you didn't not have power. I mean electricity, you know. You're never without your power. But some of us had PG&E, you know, experiences, right, this week with the power, the blackout. And I noticed that I felt more connected to the drivers around town where the traffic lights were out because we had to look at each other, right, and navigate whose turn it was to go which way. And it echoed, that experience echoed a story that Mark tells in the book about an intersection where five different roads came together in the Netherlands. And they, the traffic experts were, and the engineers of that, were trying everything they could possibly do to make this intersection safer because it had a really high level of accidents there. And so They put, you know, stripping down and lights on and signs and then bigger signs and more flashing lights and they had just pretty much tried everything and the accident rates just didn't budge or even maybe increased. So finally this one young civil engineer said, what if we just strip it all back down to the way it once was? And they're kind of out of ideas. I call them the Nether Trans, like Caltrans, you know, I'm not sure what they're called. The people in Netherlands. But anyway, so they did it. They said, okay, nothing to lose. We'll take everything away. So they took all those traffic lights and flashers and signs off. And guess what? People navigated that five-way intersection beautifully, and the accident rates went down. Because they were connecting, they were making eye contact, they were looking, and common courtesy returned. Isn't that amazing? It's the simple things like that. If we just kind of reverse our thinking on a few things and really go back, in a way, to the very basics that hold us together as a human family, we can see that we actually can trust ourselves to figure it out. We the people, you know, we know how to do this. We know how to navigate and to create a harmonious, beautiful, communal experience of life. We just need to trust ourselves. And so that experience, as Mark says, given the chance, ordinary people will reestablish lines of communication in a way that honors their own needs and the needs of the whole. And so we, the ordinary people and the extraordinary people, because we're all extraordinary, we all have a significant impact on this world, can come together and reinvent the ways that we move about the world together, especially when we take stock of the kinds of core values that unity is placing. you know, love and wisdom and connection. And that brings me to service. Because it is when we connect that we come back to this idea of love, right? Love, we always return to love. It brings us full circle. When we put a love into action, it is service. And that's our fourth core value. And service is practiced in many ways, including through generosity. You know, Indigenous peoples in Canada and in North America for a long time had a ceremony of generosity. It was called potlatch. And potlatch was like a giveaway, kind of like our law of circulation, our circulation day in action here. For years, I know Lonnie Lee ran our circulation day. And she would always comment on how it brought her so much joy to teach people in the community, the wider community, the value of a love offering. Because they would come, we'd have all those goods out that the YOUers were giving away, and they would come and they would say, well, how much for this? And she'd say, whatever you want. And then they'd be like, what? What do you mean, whatever I want? Whatever you want to pay, it's fine, it's a love donation. And so it was that kind of process of giving and receiving, right? So potlatch, in a similar way, was a giveaway ceremony. It was a sanctified ceremony of generosity. In what happened, usually the winter time, a tribe would get together, and the idea was that you would give away, as the giver would give away as many personal belongings as they could, as they felt like they could afford to do. And the receiver would try to give away more than they received. And so it was all about giving and all about generosity. Amazingly, this was considered a threat to the new European-American ethos of progress. Because progress was based on self-interest. Progress was based on amassing individual wealth. And so, in fact, the ones that were leading the charge to push against the Indigenous people's potlatch ceremony were the Christian missionaries. William Duncan, in 1875, a Christian missionary, said the single greatest barrier or obstacle to Indians becoming Christians was potlatch, a ceremony of generosity. It's hard to wrap our minds around that, isn't it? So for 70 years, it actually became outlawed in Canada and in the U.S. for American Indians, Indigenous peoples, to practice potlatch. Luckily, there was wisdom that came 70 years later that repealed those laws. But here's the thing, no matter what we do culturally or politically, spiritual law never changes. The law of circulation cannot be outlawed. It's just not possible because it's how the universe works. It's always, forever. It's one of those things that will not change. And so for us as spiritual citizens of the world, it's our work to really ground ourselves in spiritual law so that when the winds of culture and politics blow, we are there anchoring truth. Isn't that our work? Isn't that what we're here to do? Yes? Yeah. This is what we're all about. And so to land ourselves in the practices like we have of, we're not currently doing the law of circulation day, I keep saying that, but that basic law is in action for us, right? As we give, so we receive. As we practice generosity, we are serving. We are love in action. So how can we reframe the idea of wealth for ourselves? Maybe, I wonder, if wealth isn't so much how much we have, but how much we give away. What if we measured wealth that way? Wealth measured in generosity rather than stuff. It's a whole different shift, isn't it, in many ways, for our culture. But what if we started it here? In really shifting our mindset in that way. And we could just take one thing, you know, ask ourselves one thing, one way that we could be practicing generosity in a new way, one idea about how we could bring more generosity into our lives. And then we could meditate upon that idea and decide, okay, I'm going to act on it. And then go ahead and act on it. Whatever it is that comes to us, maybe in a moment of prayer, how could I be more generous? What's one generous act I could take this week? And then we act on that, and then we just notice how we feel. Maybe let's just take a moment and see if you can come up with something for yourself. Just take a moment in the silence. What is, as we tune in to that place of wisdom within us, what is one act of generosity I could take this week? And then as we act upon it this week, we'll notice how we feel. I'm guessing some of the feelings will be things like fulfilled, prosperous, grateful, kindness, joyful, maybe even wealthy. Generosity is a wonderful way to be love in action, to be of service to one another. As we share our talents and our resources, we co-create that kind of just and harmonious and spiritually awakened world that we envision together. And I know that as that we are really here in a way, just like James DeWitt, the National Geographic photographer, once said, that our culture tends to be obsessed with being the best in the world, he said, but instead, let's be the best for the world. Just a little one-word shift, right? Let's be the best for the world. So this first affirmation as we move to our closing is all of our new core values put into one sentence. I'm going to read it first so you can just sink into it and then we can say it together. I connect in love with my human family to wisely live and serve in our shared earth home. Let's say that together. I connect in love with my human family to wisely live and serve in our shared earth home. And in short, this last affirmation, which really gets to the heart of us as spiritual citizens for the world. Let's say this together. I am a spiritual citizen for the world. And so it is.